If you're talking about it,
it's always about the money. Everything else is just conversation.
We're talking about it.
No excuses. Just find a way to get it done.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
All right, KBOI News Time, 8:39. NBC just can't get a break. I don't know about those guys. Today's show has struggled with its image and its ratings since Ann Curry. Remember her?
Mm-hmm.
Remember she got fired in 2012?
I do.
And who did they say was the reason? That would be Matt Lauer, blamed in the court of public opinion. Soon the perennial number one morning talk show found itself eating rival Good Morning America's dust. Since then, little by little, inch by inch, Today has been fighting its way back. And in the past few months, the show and Good Morning America neck and neck. Then Billy Bush happened.
Yeah.
Way to go, Billy.
Billy, of course, the guy from... From
the bus with Donald Trump.
Well, yeah, he's on the bus with Donald Trump. It was for a different show, and it was 11 years ago. But since it was him, they don't think they need to associate with him anymore.
Yeah, because, well, they were having a big coming out party on Saturday night for him.
Uh-huh.
And he was going to basically host hour number three of the Today Show, which I'm not familiar with. Apparently, it's more like...
I think it's the one between 2 and 4.
Yeah, isn't it the one that's like entertainment stuff and all that?
It could be.
I don't know. I don't watch the show because I'm working. The Today host suspension after his 10-year-old vulgar conversation with Donald Trump was revealed has put the harsh spotlight back on the morning show and its parent network, NBC. Also not helping the fact is that the Bush debacle came after Lauer was blasted over his handling of the Commander-in-Chief Forum, and NBC Nightly News anchor Lester Holt was ripped for his duties as moderator during the first presidential debate. Hadn't been a good couple of weeks for NBC. So how can NBC put the Bush scandal and the Lauer and Holt misfires behind it?
Fire Billy Bush?
They did that. Yeah, they actually, what'd they say? They suspended him for an undetermined length of time, and then the president of NBC
apparently
says,
it's not a paid suspension.
Yeah.
So it's a firing.
He said he ain't never coming back.
Yeah.
Communications crisis expert Scott Pinkster says Bush is gone.
Yeah.
Television morning shows tend to cater to a demographic that's mostly female. For this demographic, personal likability is incredibly important.
It's probably not bad for a male demographic either.
That's true.
I mean, personal likability is a nice thing.
Yeah. Once an audience decides they don't like you, it's gone. I mean, they're gone. They're watching something else.
Especially with, you know, the morning shows and things, because it's like, you know, this is how people start their day.
And
they can invite you into their living room, or they can invite somebody else into the living room that they like better.
And basically, they don't want baggage in the morning. They don't want any baggage.
Yeah.
They want people who can bring them fun stuff and good news and style and fashion and entertainment, whatever. NBC is well-versed in damage control, including the firestorm at Weathered, when former anchor Brian Williams...
Oh, yeah, exaggeration boy.
...was caught in 2015 exaggerating his coverage of Hurricane Katrina and fly-alongs he had taken in Iraq, where didn't he say he took some...
Yeah, he said his plane was under fire and was hit. And as it turns out, it was actually another plane that had...
It was 20 minutes ahead.
Yeah, it was 20 minutes or an hour or something like that ahead of his plane. Anyway, it wasn't his plane.
Yeah. The Brian Williams story shows that NBC and MSNBC don't really have standards, said Dan Gaynor, vice president of business and culture at the Media Research Center. Williams made up news. And rather than fire him, the network moved him and let him keep pretending to be a newscaster.
I think at a,
harsh words, isn't it?
I think at a considerably
lesser,
smaller salary. Yeah.
after a suspension.
When you go from network to basic cable,
you don't
make nearly the same amount of money.
Yeah. Pinkster had another theory as to why NBC keeps making missteps. Here's what he says. My suspicion is that NBC is doing what many large companies do, and that's making crisis communication decisions by committee.
Mm.
You know how that works.
I do.
That doesn't work because nobody
there's an old
agrees.
Saying, there's an old saying, nothing really good was ever invented by a committee.
Yeah. Well, here's how they put it. Muddled statements and disjointed messaging because too many people with diametrically different agendas are trying to set policy.
And what was the other one? A horse designed by committee turned out to be an elephant.
Yeah. Nobody at NBC knows what actions are deal breakers and which ones are forgivable. Is a news anchor like Brian Williams lying about heroism in a war zone less egregious than Billy Bush giggling and acting inappropriately when a celebrity says something outrageous off camera?
And that's the interesting part of that. Billy Bush simply participated with Trump, whom he was supposed to accompany Trump that day. And so rather than get into an argument with him and tell him to shut up, he just participated.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
What
are you going to do? I mean, you're going to tell him to shut up? No. Because then you'll be looking for a job back 10 years ago.
Well, yeah.
But you don't have to participate in it.
True.
I don't know.
I'm wondering if he'd have been in trouble if the only thing you could hear him say on the tape is, huh.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
Probably not.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, there was a story out there that NBC was going to run that tape and cut out Billy Bush's parts. That didn't sound right, did it?
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
It's 8:52. Thanks, Rick Worthington. Jobless claims. Chris, 42-year low, U.S. employers shun firings.
Mm-hmm.
Filings for U.S. unemployment benefits were at a four-decade low over the past 2 weeks as sales prospects encouraged employers to maintain headcounts.
And as usual, people like to point out that this doesn't count the people who aren't looking for a job, who don't have one but aren't looking for one. What it does is it measures the number of Americans that file for unemployment benefits.
Right.
And that's what's at a 43-year low. And I don't know necessarily that some of that doesn't include people who have had unemployment benefits and aren't filing for them now because they're out.
They're expired, yeah.
Yeah.
The jobless claims 246,000 in the period that ended October 8th, unchanged from the previous week's level, which was revised lower after we gave it last time.
And the last time they had a number that low was November 1973.
Yeah.
So darn near 43 years ago.
Yeah. The Labor Department showed Thursday in Washington the 246, which was revised down from a median forecast in a Bloomberg survey at 253,000.
Mm-hmm.
Employers remain reluctant to lay off workers as the pool of potential job candidates dries up. In other words, like you said, there's nobody looking for work.
They made college $40,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So all of a sudden, the qualified applicants are dwindling.
Fewer and farther between. Openings remain at record highs, job openings, making conditions ripe for wage gains that may spur Federal Reserve policymakers to raise interest rates by the end of the year. And we have talked about the interest rates, et cetera, and neither one of us is an accountant.
That is correct.
And so...
Also mathematician.
Yeah, and so a lot of people have strong feelings about this, and we just kind of go, mm-hmm. Findings have been below 300,000 for 84 straight weeks. 84 straight weeks.
Which is the best since about 1970.
Yep.
Well, and they use that kind of as a number for 300,000.
Yeah.
If the economy is robust, the number will be under 300,000. If the economy is bad, the number will be over 300,000.
Yep.
The only problem with that is that, like back in 1970, the workforce was actually quite a bit smaller because the population of the country was quite
not
a bit smaller.
That many people.
And so they still use that 300,000.
Should they revise that, you think?
I don't know because,
again,
you know,
we're not math majors.
I mean, if you want to raise it to 500,000 and then tell people, hey, only 500,000 people filed for, you know, somebody's going to say, you know, that isn't good.
Yeah. Total filings in each of the last 2 weeks, the lowest, as you said, since November of 73. The four-week average of claims, a less volatile measure than the weekly figure, declined from 249,250 or down to 249,250 from 250 to 750. While there was nothing unusual in the data, two states, Louisiana and Virginia, had estimated jobless claims last week, according to the Labor Department. States such as Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas may see a pickup in applications. And, okay, what happened in Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas? Hurricane Matthew.
Oh, yeah. I think I would apply for a job at, like, a disaster cleanup place.
Yeah, or construction. Or
anything.
Yeah, road builder.
Or you can help the people
bridge
at the
builder.
You can help the people at the insurance company with their paperwork.
Yeah. Economists at Goldman Sachs Group project a 10,000 gain in the week ending October 15th as workers displaced by the storm start filing for unemployment because they have no place to work. However, they're going to hire people to build their places to work back up.
Yeah.
So it'll be a push.
We're not quite to where China is yet, you know, where they build those cities that nobody lives in.
Yeah. But people own them. They own the houses, but they don't live there.
If you're talking about it,
it's always about the money. Everything else is just conversation.
We're talking about it.
No excuses. Just find a way to get it done.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. More bad news for millennials. Always seems to be bad news for millennials.
Are they losing on Survivor?
Yeah. A common observation about millennials is the generation's penchant for spending on experiences over goods.
Mm-hmm.
In other words,
yeah, they're not buying big houses.
To Thailand because I want to see what it's like.
Yeah,
they're not buying a new car.
They're not buying an expensive car, but they are traveling.
Yeah.
You're right.
A recent Harris Group study found 72% of millennials plan to focus on experiences rather than on physical things in their future spending.
Okay.
That's led to hand-wringing about a younger generation spending too much at where? Bars and restaurants.
Well,
spending habits that are the biggest problem.
Those are experiences.
Yeah. The most significant financial challenge facing the 20-somethings, and I'm really interested in this because I have a 23-year-old daughter who's on her own living away from us in a city several states away.
Big city, too.
Big city. The most significant financial challenge facing 20-somethings and 30-somethings is how they will be able to save and invest for retirement. But she seems to be different because she's a little miffed at renting.
Yeah.
Renting is pouring money down a rat hole.
And she already knows that at 23. That's good.
And she would like to buy a house. But the problem is, how long are you going to be?
Yeah.
I'm not one of those people. Well, I'm not one to move around. Neither are you.
But a lot of people. When they're in their 20s, they're a lot more mobile because, you know, they have a tendency to change jobs more often.
Yeah.
or you know, take an opportunity that comes up that they'd have to move.
So how do you buy a house? I mean, did you buy a house in Austin?
I knew a guy.
She doesn't know if she's going to be there in 5 years.
There was a guy who came here several years ago, one of the stations, to be a program director, and he had moved from Concord, California, and he bought a house. But the main reason he bought a house is because the one he sold in California, he got $250,000 for it. And at the time, he bought one up here for $90,000 that was larger.
Yeah, well, he can still do that same ratio.
But he was only in town about 2 years and then just sold the house.
And made money.
Yeah.
Seems like... See, now, does that sound attractive to you?
No.
Me neither.
I don't like moving. Yeah. Let me rephrase that. I don't like packing up all my furniture and everything I own into a truck and then going someplace else and having to unpack.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm, you know, completely sitting still all the time.
No, I mean, I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
I don't really like it either. So
might be why we don't do
it. I'm just not sure about that. Anyway, millennials, they don't save money.
However, don't
buy things.
Well, and the deal is, if you don't buy very many things, then it is very easy.
Yeah, you don't owe.
Yeah,
you don't owe.
No.
Yeah. In addition,
and there are nice places where you can rent furnished apartments.
Yeah. Millennials face a mathematical double whammy of lower lifetime earnings and lower investment returns that will make their challenge even more difficult. Now, in the last, 10 years? I guess since 2007, you can't get interest rates on anything. I mean, you know, used to have certificates of deposit and all of these things, or you could put your money in a savings account, at least get 2 or 3%.
Good news.
Now you get nothing.
Good news if you're buying something, not so good if you're, trying to save or make money.
Yeah. On the income front, a Yale economist study of earnings from college graduates, which showed large negative wage effects to graduating in a worse economy. In some cases, they saw as much as $100,000 less in cumulative earnings over the next two decades versus those who graduated into more favorable times. So many millennials hit the job market during the Great Recession.
So essentially it will take $5,000 roughly a year from you for 20 years.
Yeah.
Like we need that.
I don't know. It's on the investing front, a McKinsey & Company report said diminishing returns, why investors may need to lower their expectations. Well, I mean, this affects me, too. I'm a guy who I'm up there in age, and I don't particularly want to put my money anywhere risky.
Yeah, I understand that.
I mean, I don't want high-risk
at
my age.
You don't want high risk.
If I lose it, then what do I eat?
Exactly. You know? And when I first started, I think, saving for retirement, I was about 25.
Mm-hmm.
And they were telling each one of us, because they were introducing this new program into our where we were working, and they were telling each one of us, you know, what sort of things we might want to steer our investments into
toward,
depending on our age. And they said, for somebody who's 25 years old, they said, it's up to you. The risk is up to you, but it's probably a lot better for me at that time. You know, they said, to get into some of the higher risk things. And at the time they said, the only real sure thing is real estate.
Yeah.
Which turned out not to be true.
Yeah. And so I can remember earning 12% on what was basically a savings account it's not a 401k. It's a, what do you call the thing you had before? IRA.
IRA, right, yeah.
So an IRA. And I for a year, earned 12%.
Oh, wow.
Who was it? Carter? Who was president then when interest rates were so high?
Oh, Carter, yeah.
Yeah, it was Carter.
Well, yeah, you bought a house and your interest rate would be 18%.
I bought it for 10.5%. My house, and then have renegotiated it.
Here we do have a breaking news story.
Really?
A New Jersey judge this morning issued a criminal summons for Chris Christie in connection to his role in the George Washington Bridge scandal, according to a published report. Hackensack Municipal Court Judge Roy McGeady issued a probable cause summons for Christie, the judge's clerk confirmed.
Remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
We are back. KBOI News Time 919. KBOI rewards code is jobless. 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 Go to 670KBOI.com. Enter jobless. Earn today's 5,000 rewards points. All right, we've been talking about millennials and how many of them are into life for experiences. So they have experiences. They don't buy material things.
Yeah.
They travel around, then come home and move in with mom and dad. I mean, you know, that happens
and of
a
course,
lot.
And, of course, not all of them do that.
No, no, not
all. As Donald Trump would say, I'm sure some of them are good people.
Yeah, yeah. All right, here are five ways. Now, if you're a millennial or the parent of a millennial or whatever,
mm-hmm.
get a pencil. There are five ways millennials can be sure they have the experiences they want down the road when they retire.
Gotcha.
One, make a budget that includes savings. My daughter actually did this. The first month she got paid, she saved money.
Well done.
I didn't. It's good to plan ahead and get your finances in order, establish goals. All right, you got to do that.
Well, you know, with us, the first month we probably ever got paid, we probably thought to ourselves, hey, I wonder how I should get the rest of the rent.
Exactly. Save more than you want to. That's number two. There are plenty of enticing ways to spend your paycheck, like on experiences.
Yeah.
But given the constraints of low investment returns, amen on that, your savings need to be higher than you think. Number three, and this is she learned this in high school.
Okay.
Boise High. Thank you, Boise High. Invest early because compound interest is a nice thing.
It is.
However, compound interest these days, not what it used to be.
Two words, chintzy.
Yeah. Time is an incredible asset on invested money. But listen to this. Oh, I love this. Consider that a 7% return on $50,000 for 10 years creates $98,000, while a 7% return for 20 years creates a nest egg of $193,000. My question to you is, where the hell are you going to get 7%? Again, of course, when you're young, you can take risks.
That's a very good question. I imagine if you were going to put $1 billion in the bank, they would gladly give you 7% if you wanted.
Nope. Nope.
Doesn't matter how much?
Well, okay. Within reason?
All right.
I don't know.
And $1 billion isn't within reason.
No. Well, no. I don't know how much it would take before you got
a decent... okay.
Yeah. Ensure yourself when you're young and healthy. If you wait to buy life insurance, long-term care insurance, or disability insurance until you're old and out of shape, you're going to pay more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Plus, it ends up.
I only kind of agree with this one.
But it does end up being an asset. Like, you know, it's an investment,
sure.
too.
I only kind of agree with this one because we're talking about millennials being in it for the experiences, not owning a home, not having kids, not doing it.
Yeah. So it seems unlikely that they buy life
insurance. Why do you need
life
insurance? Because.
Maybe there are dangerous experiences.
Yeah, well, get enough to bury you. Because if you don't have any dependents, and if you don't owe any money, why do you need life insurance?
Mm, good point.
Yeah, the life insurance people
however,
are going, shut up!
However,
if
you ever plan to have dependents.
Yeah, that's true. And if you start when you get it, when you're young and healthy, it is cheaper. And ask for help is a final one. Millennials don't trust Wall Street, nor do older people. After the financial crisis, and many think they can find the answer to anything. Where, Chris? On the internet.
Uh-huh.
However, getting the correct answer.
Exactly. You can find an answer.
You can find. Okay, you can find any answer you want to find.
You betcha.
Yeah. You can shoot your financial success in the foot with one ill-advised decision. I've done that twice.
There are wrong answers.
I've shot off both my feet.
Very wrong answers.
Yeah.
Terribly wrong answers.
And answers that.
And the occasional ones that have, you know, something to do with reality.
Yeah. A good financial advisor basically says, pay your own way.
Instant message from Sheldon, who says, millennials are a game changer. All the negativity and vitriol directed at them is misguided. Millennials travel and seek experience rather than seek merchandise because it is smarter. Experiences create relationships, diversity, and intelligence. Material wealth is overrated. What good does an opulent car or house do other than bury you under debt or lock you into a local economy that doesn't have needed resources? This also speaks to another problem facing Idaho. The young people are leaving and quite possibly never coming back. Rather than complain about how millennials are different, maybe we should quit being old curmudgeons and respect their generational difference.
Did you hear me complain about anything about millennials?
I don't think. That might have been me.
Oh. Yeah, my daughter got out of here. I went, all right.
Yeah, well,
she always says, though, that someday she'll come back. And she's always saying, don't sell the Boise house. Don't sell the Boise house. I'll buy it someday.
Wow.
So, okay. But,
legacy, how nice.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree that experiences are great, you know. And back when you and I were kids, we were too busy trying to
get stuff.
Yeah, which was his point.
Yeah.
So basically, we're knocking us, that's not millennials.
Yeah, they used to tell us on TV that stuff was success.
Yeah. Keep up with the stuff Joneses have. All right, we are back. I'm going to try my new call screener here. Jim is on. Hang in there, Jim. Jim is on line one. I guess this doesn't work.
So far, it seems a lot like the old one.
So I just have to punch up. No, I just.
Oh.
Because it said it changed colors and everything. I wanted to see that.
Oh, okay.
It didn't. Hey, Jim. How you
doing? How's it going?
Good.
Yeah, was it 2006 when the BSU football team shocked the world?
Yeah, the year of 2006, 2007 Fiesta Bowl.
It was New Year's Day, 2007.
Right.
I was going to say, how did the world ever get over that? How many Valium did the world have to take? I mean, the world was rocking, I'll tell you.
Probably depends on how close you live to Norman, Oklahoma.
I kind of figure you guys are still whipping out that DVD.
Yeah, you know, I usually play it before the season, but I didn't do it this year. And then when we went to play Oregon State, when we rode the bus from Portland to Corvallis, we played the first half going from Portland to Corvallis and the second half going back from Corvallis to Portland.
I usually only watch it at Costco.
Well, I was just going to say, you were talking about millennials and how they think. Now, I'm a baby boomer, but I'm a millennially thinking. And I guess back then, you know, I mean, everything was, it seemed like money, you know?
It was.
I'm lucky that in the 60s, my father put me through college. So I get out of college in accounting, and I'm wondering what to do with the rest of my life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't have plans to have family and all this thing. I could see myself, like everybody else, getting up in the morning, going to work, coming home, watching TV, going to bed, et cetera, for the rest of my life. That didn't seem too exciting. So I went to California, got a job with Bank of America. I was blessed. They asked me what I wanted to do. I told them I liked traveling, so they sent me to South America, Central America, and the Caribbean for a year and a half, auditing for Bank of America, you know. And so after that, in the late 70s and one time in 82, you mentioned a guy earlier who was from Concord, California. Well, I got attached with the Concord Blue Devils Drum and Bugle Corps and traveled with them for four seasons. I mean, travel and music and all this. The first time I saw this place, Boise, Idaho, was in 1977 when we came here to do a show at BSU.
Uh-huh.
And so anyway, I mean, and so I never thought, and now, I mean, my father had, you know, he had put, well, he made money, he invested, he was generous, and he gave me whatever. So now I'm investing, and so I'm not on skid row. But luckily, to me, experiences were everything. When I went to South America and the Blue Devils, I carried a tape recorder and a camera. I mean, and so I was. So my thing was to work my way along, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty smart.
But that was before computers. That was before corporations were all thinking about money. I flew all over South America, Central America, first class on Braniff. So, I mean, it was a joy. But
those were the days when there were people who actually owned corporations or ran corporations who were attempting to make a living, not necessarily break the bank.
Right. You know, and I filled the demand, you know, where there was no supply. Most people didn't want to do what I did.
Yeah.
Most people didn't want to live out of a suitcase, or in the case of the Blue Devil, sleep on gym floors and sleeping bags.
Wow.
So I had a great time, and just, I don't know. I mean, that to me was life, not accumulating a bunch of crap.
The only advice I ever gave my kids as far as working and things like that was find something you like to do, then find a way to make money doing it.
Yep.
That's the only advice I ever gave them.
That's what they say. You know, my friend gave me a book a while back, It was called How to Make Money Without a Job, having a job.
Yeah, I've done it for 50 years.
Well, when you think of a job, you think of work, you think of career. I've always hated the word career because career is so confining.
Yep.
So thank you much.
All right, good stuff. Bye-bye. Thanks, Jim.
First time I ever got hired full-time at a radio station, earlier that day I had told them, this is what I told them, I've decided to work here full-time.
You told them that?
Yeah. And they said, okay.
Nice.
I wish I'd have told them, you know, like he did, that I wanted to travel, too.
Yeah.
Apparently they were in the mood to grant wishes that day.
Yeah. Let's go to John
I was 22. I was a little more bold then.
Yeah, John in Napa. John, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Hey, I got a criticism and a solution, or a partial solution anyways.
Okay.
I'm 55, and so I'm not a millennial.
Too old to be a millennial.
Yeah, I got four kids that are.
Yeah.
And they're all doing very, very well. I mean, there's no doctors or lawyers or anything, if you consider that doing well. But they are, they're doing very well, and that's because their mom, we homeschooled them. And the two boys had to work with me when I had started my own business. And they got to eat and they got a place to sleep for pay. That's how they were raised. And when they got out of the truck, they grabbed a tool and they got to work. And so this is what they're telling me now that they're out. They've graduated. They moved on. They're doing their own work. And they run into millennials that have no idea how to work. And they're telling me, Dad, these people don't. They don't know anything, and they think they're astronomically smarter than everybody else on the planet. When they get hired, the first thing they want to know is how many sick days do they get. And I remember that when I was working, that was one of the first things that was that I remember people asking how many sick when I was working when I was on the clock was how many sick days you were given. And all this stuff is slowly creeping in, and I got a lot of jobs back in the day just because I could pass a urinalysis. I got a peed in a cup, and everybody else failed, and I got the job. And, you know, that was, and so slowly this has been creeping out.
That's why we hired Chris. He's about like your age. That's why we hired him.
Sounds like an interesting, you know, place to work.
Well, see, my daughter is different. She went to, you know, to public schools, and she did go to a private college and did all this stuff and graduated and is doing very well. The common theme here is the parents. I mean, both parents, you had a wife, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm serious. Both parents.
That's sad that I know you are, but it's funny.
Both parents, hands-on. Talk to your kids, be interested in what they're doing, do stuff with them. All of the, you know, that.
Can't get past that.
No, you can't get past that because that's what gives them confidence. It relaxes them. They stay off drugs usually. And it's
as much as they fight their mom, they respected every single thing she said.
Then the alternative is you could ignore them for the first 15 years of their life and then go in and complain about their teachers.
You know, some kids are bent that way. I was one of them. I could not stand being in, you know, 12 years in prison. That was what it was.
Yeah.
I couldn't take it. And I didn't get an education until I got out of the public school system. However, my solution, I didn't want to leave this conversation without throwing the solution out there.
Sure.
There is a book out there that Dave Ramsey was pushing a while back, and I just grabbed it and I gave it to my boys, and they're just head over heels applying this at work, and it's called Lynchpin. And that is how to go into a job and make yourself invaluable to that company or whoever you're working for.
That's very smart.
Most of the kids, and that was another criticism I'm going to bring up, they don't believe, millennials, don't believe that you worked hard and earned anything you have. You stole that from somebody else. And whether they say that or not, that's what they think in the back of their minds. And their way to success is to steal it from you somehow, to manipulate you out of what you have so they can then possess it.
Yeah, that's the entitlement deal right there.
Right, and proof of that is, I just saw this on the news this morning, there's an app out there that you can flash your phone over your math page, and it will give you the answers to everything on the page. They think that's how you succeed is by cheating. And I don't want to lump them all into one group, but that group, however big it is getting bigger.
Yeah.
I'll let you guys go. Right. Have a good day. Go Broncos.
Go Broncos. Thanks, John.
Well,
I wonder if that group's getting bigger. Do you think it is?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it basically...
There were ne'er-do-wells when I was a kid, too.
Essentially, I think millennials are supposed to be anybody born from about 1982 to around 2000.
Right.
And so there's probably a new group out there we haven't even figured out a name for yet.
Yeah.
Generation Z or something.
I'm sure
but
there is.
What I would tell him, though, is there are a lot of them that think that the way to get rich is to cheat. And I think those are the ones who have just been, you know, paying attention.
Bada-boom. 9:46.
Right now, back to Paul, Jay, and Chris.
All right. KBOI News Time, 9:51. Let's go to the phones. Jane of Boise on line 2. Jane, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Jane.
Two words describe what you were talking about earlier. And as a retired law enforcement, I had 25 years in. The two words are called parental involvement.
No question. That's good.
You don't see kids in trouble where their parents are involved.
Yeah, and that is almost 100% of the time true.
That's right.
If kids don't have leadership or warmth or love or comradeship or family, whatever you want to call parental involvement, those are two great words.
If they don't have examples at home, they'll find them somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. Kids need to be loved. And if they're not getting it at home, they're going to get it from gangs or on the street or wherever.
Yeah, or when I was a kid, the unloved kids all went to San Francisco and joined communes. Seriously.
They were the beatniks.
Yeah, they seriously did that because, I mean, it gave them a sense of family that they didn't have at home.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
All right, good stuff. Thank you, Jane.
People named Leslie in Tex.
Yeah.
Sheldon wrote back. He said, my email tone was aimed at the listeners who hear the word millennials and have a negative reaction. Not you guys. You are open-minded and do a great job. Well, thank you, Sheldon.
Thanks, Dad. It's my dad, Sheldon Schneider. No, that's good. Sheldon hit the nail on the head because we weren't trying to knock anybody. All right, this breaking story you gave a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie faces an official misconduct complaint stemming from the closure of lanes leading to the George Washington Bridge back in the day. A judge signed the summons this morning, sending the case to the Bergen County Prosecutor's Office, which will decide whether the case will lead to an indictment. The Republican governor appointed the prosecutor. That's unique. Municipal Court Administrative Specialist Jessica Limley says a complaint of official misconduct would mean Christie is accused of knowingly refraining from performing a duty imposed on him by law or clearly inherent by the nature of his office.
Well, you really shouldn't use public services for revenge against somebody.
Yeah, which is what they think
now,
he did.
Do you want to hear the statement from
him? He says he didn't know about the plot.
Well, yeah, you want to hear the statement from Christie's office? This is a dishonorable complaint filed by a known serial complainant and political activist with a history of abusing the judicial system. The simple fact is the governor had no knowledge of the lane realignments either before they happened or while they were happening. This matter has already been thoroughly investigated by 3 separate independent investigations. Why is it always independent investigations?
I don't know. The charge, misconduct, carries a possible sentence of 5 to 10 years in jail.
The complaint is based on testimony by, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, David Wildstein or Wildstein. A Christie appointee at the Port Authority and the government's key witness in its trial against Bridgeanne Kelly, a former Christie aide, and Bill Baroni, a former Port Authority executive.
They're the ones who admit they knew about it.
Yeah. Wildstein said he and Barron notified Christie of the lane closures at a 9/11 remembrance ceremony. Brennan says Christie should have stopped the lane closures at that point, but didn't.
So we'll have to see how that comes out.
Chris Christie has to go to court, I guess.
It's the latest breaking news from Hackensack. KBOI News Time, 9:55. That does it for today. Open phones Friday. Tomorrow we'll talk about whatever's on your mind. Something to think about with Mike Rogers.